Hello and welcome to Banfield, when jail time becomes a family affair. Ethan Crumbly's parents have now joined him in the same Michigan jail. But the family couldn't be more separated tonight. All three of them separate, in isolation, and on suicide watch. And they could be there for a while. 15-year-old Ethan faces 24 charges in last week's horrific school shooting. The worst of them, four counts of first-degree murder and one count of terrorism causing death. Not surprisingly, no bail was offered to this 15-year-old kid, and he was sent to grown-up jail. His parents, grown-ups themselves, James and Jennifer Crumbly, they are charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter for their alleged part in Ethan's shooting spree, allegedly. Their bond was set at $500,000 each. Without that usual thing where you get to post out with just 10% down, well, that's what happens when you skip your arraignment and you force multiple law enforcement agencies to go on a manhunt. James and Jennifer Crumbly were spotted and arrested at a warehouse, an art studio in Detroit on Saturday. They were brought back to the jail where their own son was already being housed. News Nation's Brian Enten is braving the chilly weather. He's outside of that jail facility tonight. So I guess the big question at this point, Brian, have these parents been able to see their own son, who are now officially fellow inmates?
No, they have not. And the sheriff here in Oakland County made it very clear, Ashley, that the parents, Jennifer and James, would not be able to see their son, Ethan, and they would not be able to talk to him. It's an interesting situation here at the Oakland County Jail. As you mentioned, the sheriff says they've never had a situation like this before where an entire family, Ethan, James, and Jennifer, are all together inside the jail behind me. But you mentioned it, also very separated. They are in isolation. The sheriff says there was no sign that they might be suicidal when they came in. They evaluated them. But just to be safe, he has counselors watching them 24 hours a day. All three of them are on suicide watch.
Okay, so that begs the question, with a 15-year-old boy in an adult facility, what are they doing for him? I mean, is there some special dispensation? Does he have a guardian ad litem? Does he have a monitor? Does he have a mental health advocate? Somebody who can be mommy or daddy, because clearly that's lacking now and maybe a lot before.
Yeah, the parents clearly just abandoned him. And you mentioned the bond, $500,000 each, cash only. So it doesn't appear that these parents are going to be getting out of jail anytime soon, and they won't be able to have any sort of communication with their son. It's interesting. The parents have private attorneys. The son has a public defender who is now apparently his only advocate.
So, okay, and see, the problem is, when you have a public defender, you also have to clear something called competency, right? So there's two things. There's, am I competent to stand trial? Meaning, can I aid in my defense? And then, of course, are you capable and do you have the mental capacity? Whole other question. But competency is a huge issue at this point. And I'm not so sure that a 15-year-old can aid a public defender without some kind of parental guidance or at least adult advocacy. So do we know if they are making an arrangement of some kind, since it's such a twisted case that his own parents can't communicate with him because their case is connected to his case?
Yeah, it is twisted, and the sheriff acknowledged that. As of Saturday, he said no plan for a guardian at that point. And I asked him a couple of times, I said, I understand that you have the parents separated now from their son, but at some point, will they be able to talk? And he said, no, there is absolutely no plan for them to be reunited in the jail. And he even said, as of Saturday, he didn't think that the son had any idea that his parents were even in jail.
Okay, so now we know that Ethan's lawyer has told us that he's aware at this point, right?
Yeah, that is the latest that he is likely now aware. And there were people saying, you know, the way things work in jails, word gets around. He would probably at some point hear that his parents had been arrested and that they were now inside the same jail as him.
Oh, okay, that last thing you just said. Oh, my God. Word gets around. Yeah, because he's in a grown-up jail with grown-up men who did grown-up things, allegedly. So did they say anything about how they're housing him? Because I don't care what our viewers, when they come at me and say, well, he did all these things and he deserves, he's still 15. He's still at risk, and the jail is still responsible, meaning the community, meaning us, you know, we're responsible for that kid. If something happens to that kid, it's on our heads. So did they say anything about how they are housing him among all those big men?
Well, first of all, he's being charged as an adult, and you said it correctly. This is an adult jail. He's in an adult jail, but the sheriff made clear that they need to make sure that he is not going to hurt himself or anyone else, which is why he is in isolation. He's not in general population. He's not, you know, in a cell with another adult man. He is on his own, and again, being watched 24/7. They say he doesn't appear to be suicidal, but they don't want to take any chances.
So now you're looking at a 15-year-old who's in the SHU, you know, and that's basically, you know, jail lingo for you're 23 hours a day in a tiny room with your meals being thrown through a slot and eyeballs coming in, you know, on a regular basis to make sure you're not sometimes wearing paper clothes. But again, it's a 50. Let's put aside the allegations of what this person is alleged to have done, which is horror, absolute horror. But it's still a kid, and they're basically treating him like an adult. There's no mental health advocate that we know of at this point. I get it. They might not be able to say because of HIPAA. But at this point, nothing other than his own public defender in contact with him to say, Ethan, we got you. We're going to work this out. We're going to figure this out. You just need to stay calm. You're 15, locked in a metal room with a metal toilet, etc. Do we know about any other dispensations for him?
It's our understanding. It's just the public defender at this point. No real mental health advocate. Again, we know he underwent some sort of mental health evaluation when he came into the jail. But I've sort of been wondering the same thing because it was just Ethan and his parents, James and Jennifer, that lived alone in this small house in Oxford. There was no one else living with them in the house. Obviously, somewhat of a close family, especially based on some of the evidence that we found out with the text messages between them, which that's a whole nother story and very, very disturbing. But you have to think that Ethan, really a kid, 15 years old, now in the jail, but has absolutely no communication with the mom and dad who he's so used to, who he lived with.
It's amazing. Now, before I let you go, I'm going to switch gears slightly, and it's still the same story, just a little bit away from, you know, the Ethan issue. And that is that you talked to Attorney General Dana Nessel today, Attorney General of Michigan. And obviously the big question is who else might, you know, have to take the rap for what happened and four dead kids, seven injured people in that school shooting. And I'm asking about school officials, school administrators who didn't search the backpack and return him to school. And then, of course, there's this other guy, the artist, who lent his art studio to these fleeing parents. Do we know anything more about additional charges in this wide investigation?
Well, the Michigan Attorney General was very, very clear that anything is possible at this moment. I asked her, could school officials who apparently made some very big mistakes here, could they face criminal charges? She said anything is possible at this moment. And it's so interesting because she has now offered to do this independent investigation, to have her special agents do an independent investigation into exactly what went wrong in that school. She made that offer over the weekend to the Oxford County School District. As of tonight, she says she still has not heard back. But at the end of the day, remember, she is the attorney general. She has jurisdiction over all of Michigan. She says at the end of the day, she could just do the investigation on her own, regardless of what they say.
Incredible story. Thank you for being there in the cold. Brian Enten, if you hear of anything more from inside that jail behind you, without doubt, alert us. You're on live the minute you get new information. Thank you for that. I want to now bring in Sheriff Michael Bouchard of Oakland County, Michigan, one of the largest sheriff's offices in the country. Sheriff, thank you so much for taking the time at this late hour. So you probably heard my interview with Brian Enten. I cover stories like this all the time. I, like you, have never heard of anything like this. Three members of the same family, one of them a minor child in a grown facility with grown parents. Maybe you can help me. Is there any special dispensation to deal with the fact that this is a kid in a very unique circumstance without the help of his parents now?
Well, as you talked about in the prior conversation, he has been charged as an adult, and as such, he's being held in an adult facility. But having said that, it's very clear that we keep them separate from adults. So while he's in an adult facility, whether his parents were in there or not, he would be segregated from all other adults, which is happening and would happen in any event. Secondly, women and men are segregated. So by policy and practice, even if they were not related, all three of them, they would not be in each other's company and would not be having conversations or housed in the same area. And given the nature of this, as it relates to the charges and the severity of the charges, we always have counselors and caseworkers evaluate everyone at what we call the intake process. And specific questions are asked and answered. And they go to mental health. They go to, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? Are you suicidal? All of those kinds of things. They all three answered negative to that question. They were not suicidal, and they were not in that frame of mind. But out of an abundance of caution, I ordered our staff to put them on suicide watch with super regular rounds to keep them under observation and to make sure
that
our medical staff and our psychological staff was tuning in and checking in on them.
So, Sheriff, but I mean, you've got to admit, this is nuts. The fact that a 15-year-old kid doesn't have parents who are there to visit or advocate or help make decisions with the public defender. What will change, if anything, to help guide him in this extraordinary legal process, which will likely lead to a lifetime behind bars?
Well, frankly, and sadly, we've had young people this age and sometimes even younger in for similar charges, and they're basically parentless because of the way they were raised or their situation. So we've gone through this in different situations, never where they happen to have parents co-located and co-charged on the same incident, but we have had juveniles charged as adults in our facility with not a lot of parental support or involvement. So they'll have the resources of the system to check in on that young man as the process moves forward.
Sheriff, what was the reaction of Ethan Crumbly when he learned that his parents had gone on the run and then were arrested and housed in the same facility?
Well, he wasn't really brought into discussions that they were on the run or that they had been arrested. Eventually, I'm sure he's had numerous conversations, from my understanding, through my corrections staff with his attorney. And more than likely, that attorney gave him regular updates and they've had communications, but obviously we're not part and parcel to that.
So you didn't see any kind of reaction? You didn't see or hear how this boy reacted, knowing, I mean, this is a huge, huge wrench thrown into the process, even for him at this age?
Yeah, no, ma'am. We wouldn't have been in that discussion with his attorney, obviously, and therefore the reaction when it happened in that discussion. If it did, we wouldn't even know, but I presume that it did.
Okay, I'm going to go rapid fire with you, Sheriff, if I can here. I have so many questions for you, and I so appreciate you being here. Andre Sikora, pardon my pronunciation if I didn't do it right, this is the artist whose studio was used by the Crumblies allegedly to hide out while they were wanted. And I understand that phones, computers, and tablets have been seized. Have they been searched, and have you learned anything yet?
Well, they have been seized. He is cooperating, and so is his attorney, but we executed a search warrant in any event to seize any potential digital evidence and anything related to this to help make a determination. What did he know, and when did he know it, as it relates to whether or not he knew the two individuals he was helping were actually already wanted fugitives, and that would then lead to a determination and the discussion of whether it was aiding and abetting or obstruction of justice. So, in terms
of, have you got anything yet?
Specifically, I was just going to go specifically to your question of what do we have. That obviously, when they finish the search warrant, which isn't completely finished, then they'll take that evidence to my computer crimes unit, and then they'll begin their analysis. So to answer you in a shortened way, no, we don't have anything to report at this point.
Okay. And then I understand there was a vehicle of the Crumbleys that was parked at a separate hotel facility completely. I'm thinking it is possibly Detroit. And do you think that this was a ruse so that their vehicle would be at a hotel and they would be at this very nondescript location, the warehouse?
Certainly seems rather odd. We actually found another one of the family vehicles at a hotel out in Oakland County, quite some distance from where they and the other car actually were located.
Oakland County, how far away from where they were in Detroit?
Well, Oakland County is actually a border of Detroit. The southern border of my county touches the city, but the actual physical location of the car from where they were was probably somewhere in a 16 to 20 mile distance.
So that would have taken some work to drop a car off there and then move to a different look. Any reason for that hotel? Have you discerned anything about that hotel?
Well, we've got no evidence or any thing as it relates to having them there. We found the car there, and clearly they're not talking to us.
Did you see any video evidence of them dropping the car, getting in and leaving in another car?
Not at this point. The detectives have a lot to go through, including video and witness statements.
So have you seen surveillance video from that hotel?
I honestly can't tell you what our detectives have. We've got people fanned out all over the community. I mean, you got to go back to the principal cause of this investigation. We still have almost 2,000 sure. people to interview from the school, and hundreds of hours of video there. So we're running as fast and as quickly as we can to try to examine all of that, but that hadn't obviously been completed at this point.
It's remarkable the amount of work that you have to do. One of those people I'm wondering if you're going to interview is Eli Crumbley. That's Ethan's older brother, who has made some statements in the media that Ethan was a normal kid, was never bullied, had no depression. He liked to play video games, but pretty innocuous ones like Minecraft, that he played sports, had good grades. I mean, all of this just does not sound congruous with the person that we are learning about, who is alleged to have done such monstrous things. Have you spoken to Eli Crumbley, the older brother?
Well, I haven't spoken to him. I'm sure our investigators, as I said, have fanned out to interview anybody and everybody that has information about either Ethan or the case. But I'll tell you this, that we do have, video evidence where it's certainly very dark and disturbing things that he said and seemed to be actually anxious to get at this.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Actually, no. It's going to be part of the evidence, and I don't want to get out in front of our prosecutor as she prepares for court.
I respect that. $4,000 taken from ATM. Well, ATM or ATMs, I'm not sure if it's multiple, but I know there's a limit, so you might have to go to a couple. And then also the question with regard to that, did you think they were headed for Canada?
It's hard to say where they were headed. I mean, we're obviously super close to Canada, just in near proximity. We're one of the few places in the continental 48 that you actually drive south to get to Canada. So whether they were going to head there or not, we don't know. They're not telling us, but certainly our partners with Border Patrol and the FBI and U.S. Marshal Service, we're certainly always aware that we're very close to a border, as are our partners north of the border in Canada. So everybody was alerted and looking.
Did they have to go to multiple ATMs to get $4,000 in cash?
I'm not going to get into specifics how they ended up with money. That'll all be, again, part of the prosecutor's discretion when this evidence comes out.
Okay, I understand, Sheriff. I appreciate it. Real quickly, will there be additional charges since they now certainly fit the bill for fugitives from justice? Anything that you're mulling about with the prosecutor?
Well, we still have got to put all the information together, the timelines. Again, we just are in the process of seizing digital things to make a determination if there's communication. And if so, if there is communication, what is it saying? Is it saying, we've got to get out of here, would you help us? Versus, hey, I know we haven't talked in a while. Can you help us? You know, those kinds of things, obviously, I'm just speaking in an abstract, but those are the kinds of things that we'll be looking for to help point fingers in the direction of where we continue to go.
Sheriff Michael Bouchard, you are just delightful, and I am so appreciative, and I'm going to book you right now for another show this week, because I have a feeling the information is going to be coming in fast and furious. Can I get a commitment from you to come back and talk to me?
I'll do my darndest. We're super, super busy with not only this investigation, but sadly, we've been spiked with all sorts of threats against schools and other locations. We have a business that's closed now because of threats.
So hold on a second. Is this in relation to the school shooting? Did you just say that you're getting additional threats against schools? Is that in relation to the school shooting, the one from last week?
Sadly, what we've seen, not just in this incident, but around the country, is after an actual shooting and tragedy, there's a spike in threats against other schools and locations. A variety of them typically in the past have been found that it's a kid that thinks it's a joke. It's not, or they want to get out of school. But what it is a crime. So we vigorously investigate A to determine if it's credible and real and intervene. And if it's not credible and a real threat, it's still a threat and it's punishable by up to 20 years in Michigan law. So we are running down hundreds of threats now against schools and other kinds of locations. And as I said, while I was waiting to get on with you in the last 6 minutes, I've been informed of a business that's been threatened.
Hundreds of schools and at least one business in just the last few minutes. And you think this is all copycat?
Yes, ma'am. You know, to be clear, the hundreds of schools has been over the last number of days. The business was in the last few minutes.
Understand. All right. Well, I'm going to let you get back to work because I think you have your work cut out for you. I'm so appreciative. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, you heard it here. Hundreds of threats have come in since the alleged school shooter on the right and then the subsequent fleeing of his parents on the left all happened in the last several days. Hundreds of shooting threats coming in the Oakland area to businesses and schools. I cannot believe that's where we are. Where does a parent's responsibility end? Where does it begin? If your teenage child commits a crime, when should you, the parent, pay the price? That's next. Welcome back to Banfield. Tonight, the suspect in that Michigan school shooting, 15-year-old Ethan Crumbly, along with both of his parents, are locked up in the same county jail. But the prosecutors say there could be even more people charged in connection with this horrific rampage that allegedly Ethan did. I am joined by criminal defense and civil rights attorney Mark O'Mara and clinical psychologist and parenting expert Dr. John Duffy. First to you, Mark O'Mara. I don't know if you could just hear the interview that I did with the sheriff, but he said no special circumstances, no dispensations, nothing will happen for this boy, given the fact that he now can't speak to his parents and they're locked up in fellow inmates. Does this surprise you?
It does a little bit, and you bring up a very good point, which is that the public defender is going to have to get somebody else appointed, a counselor, a psychologist, somebody who can help her, I believe it's a female, with handling this child. Because even though he did something horrific, he is still a 15-year-old child with a 15-year-old brain, which is dealing with the trauma he caused in a way that needs to be addressed, not just out of sympathy for him, I'm not suggesting for that, but in order for her to properly present a defense to him, he's got to be able to interact with her, got to gain that level of trust that normally comes with an attorney-client relationship, and also because they've got to be able to open up whatever it was that got him to the point where doing this horrendous act was acceptable or appropriate, and that's going to require some psychological intervention.
Or whether he's competent or, in the end, insane. I mean, there's so much that a parent needs to be there for. So, make it quick, Mark. What are you thinking about that?
Competence is not that hard. It's, you know, do you understand what a cop, what a judge is, what a, an attorney is? That's great. But that what we talk about in, as mitigation, the idea of why did he do this, what in his background, what may be out there, what psychological imbalances may be there, that's going to come not only from a counselor while he's in the jail, but from an expert, like maybe your next guest, who is going to be able to say, this may be why this happened. Here's an explanation for it.
Yeah, Dr. Duffy, that's you. All I keep thinking is, with parents like that, does that help you in your defense? Because clearly, Judge, that's how he was raised. Is this any help for him?
You got to hope that it has to be, right? We are not right now in the business of empathy for this young man and all the horrific things that he's done. However, it is important to consider the family circumstances under which he grew up. I think it's really important, as Mark was saying, that we get a psychologist involved with him on an ongoing basis. I understand that there was an intake done, but he was likely in shock and maybe gave answers that were appropriate at the time and correct at the time, but things do change over time. Memories are formed over time. So it's important to keep in touch with this young man as his incarceration goes on to get some feel for the context of what brought him to these horrific acts.
It's like an eeny, meeny, miny, moe with these pictures on the right. I have questions for all three of them, but Mark O'Mara, criminal charges for the two on the left, these fleeing issues. What do you think is going to happen with regard to their behavior in the last 48 hours?
Well, I mean, no question. They're going to hold a certain level of responsibility for what they did. And it's not, they weren't there for the shooting, but if they allowed a circumstance to exist where they didn't supervise the child well enough, didn't secure the guns. Many states have gun laws that hold the parents responsible if they don't secure a gun. And so we know they're looking at that. They're taking up a much higher level when they're saying, because you allow these circumstances to exist, where you are basically so negligent, so grossly negligent in caring not only for the gun, but for your child, that you can be held responsible. We know that's coming.
The fugitive
and
part. Like, they took off.
Afterwards.
Mark, they took off. Yeah. They left. Fugitives from justice. That seems so obvious to me.
Yeah. And their decisions after the fact to flee, to try and put the cars in different locations, that just evidences that what we call that scienter, right? That criminal intent or criminal liability. And that's going to show up. Obviously, it did in the bond hearing, and it's going to show up throughout all of this, because this family not only didn't do what they should have done to protect society from their son and the gun, then they take off to try and protect themselves.
Unbelievable. Okay, Dr. Duffy, I just have a couple seconds left, but is this the new norm? Do you think we're going to start seeing more parents being charged in light of, like, terrible, terrible incidents like this?
I think we might, but this is such an egregious example that I think this kind of stands alone. You know, everything I've heard so far on your show suggests that these parents and their actions have been so wildly outside the norm that I don't know that we can yet call this the new norm. Let's hope not.
I'm with you. Let's hope not. It's just so sad, everything that we've been reporting on. And Dr. Duffy and Mark O'Mara, I'm so thankful for your expertise, and thank you for staying up late.
Thank you.
Still ahead, some, I guess you could call them mixed reviews for Alec Baldwin's big Rust interview, including from the one viewer whose opinion matters more than anyone else's. Can you guess who it is? It is not Hilaria's. Welcome back. If you just happen to be in New York on Thursday night with $2,500 in your pocket, you can witness Alec Baldwin's return to public life post-Rust tragedy. Because Baldwin is billed as this year's Master of Ceremonies for the Robert F. Kennedy Ripple of Hope Awards Gala. It is a great event, and it raises money for great causes. And among some other perks for big donors to this charity is, quote, a social media post highlighting your support. And speaking of social media and support, Baldwin and his wife Hilaria are making news there. They have decided to delete their Twitter accounts in the aftermath of last week's ABC interview that Alec's fans really mostly seem to have liked, really. And then other people found self-serving or puzzling, and some people just thought it was wrong altogether. One reviewer took particular issue with this part.
I've been told by people who are in the know in terms of even inside the state that it's highly unlikely I would be charged with anything criminally.
Well, not so fast, because over the weekend, Mary Carmack Altwies, who's the Santa Fe County District Attorney, she told TMZ that Baldwin should not assume anything. And I'm going to quote her now. She said, everybody involved in the handling and use of firearms on the set had a duty to behave in a manner such that the safety of others was protected. And she went on to say, once I have had the opportunity to review the complete investigation, certain individuals may be criminally culpable. For his part, the lawyer for Rust's head gaffer, whose name is Serge Svetnoy, well, that lawyer is blasting Baldwin's primetime network TV appearance as, quote, misguided and an attempt for sympathy. Svetnoy filed one of the two civil suits to arise so far from the deadly shooting. And on ABC, Baldwin said he found both suits unsettling, coming before any action from the cinematographer's own family. Joining me now with insights and expertise on all of this are the reputation doctor himself, Mike Paul, and once again, the formidable Mark O'Mara. Okay, Mike Paul, so good to see you. First of all, I haven't seen you in a long time. What do you think, net plus or net minus for Alec Baldwin doing that interview?
I'd give him a C, maybe a C minus for the interview overall. Look, where he made the mistakes was constantly giving an answer as though he's talking to the court of law, to a judge or a jury. But we're examining this through the court of public opinion, where, as you and I know, there are hundreds of stakeholders, not just 12 or one. So for whatever gain he thought he had by not answering a question like, oh, I'm not guilty, I don't feel guilty, he had a lot of loss by not showing his heart. Whenever I am counseling a client similar to him in this kind of a situation, I'm telling them less head work, more heart work. You need to make sure you're pulling at heartstrings with authenticity and humility and having some transparency whenever you can to make sure that you're building the ultimate currency back, which is trust.
Yeah, super smart. It's a hard rope to walk, though, because with all that heart and authenticity, you could say something that's really dumb. And to that, Mark O'Mara, I do want to ask you about Serge Svetnoy's attorney, who said this on Fox News. When I take Mr. Baldwin's deposition in the civil case, I will play this interview on the record and cross-examine him on his statements line by line under oath. And I can think of a couple things, just this off the bat. He was asked, you know, are you a producer or not? And he said, well, I'm a, you know, a producer of what? Scripting and casting. But then a second later, he says, and I'm helping with the hotel rooms when they weren't happy about it. So do you think that was not the right thing to do, Mark O'Mara?
It's just never the right thing to do to go on camera when you have the potential of a criminal case pending. Obviously, when if you've been charged, never do it. Listen to your lawyer who would never advise that. But no, I guess he thought that he needed to do this because the currency that was just spoken about is his reputation, and he wanted to try and luster that up. But no, I don't think I would give him no better than a C or a C minus because you don't want to say anything about any criminal case pending, even though I don't think he's going to end up being charged when we get down to it. Don't ever challenge a prosecutor that you know her case better than she does. There was no benefit whatsoever. And there could be some negative, certainly in the civil case as well, as we just talked about. He will be cross-examined on every word of what he said on camera.
Yeah, that's even so smart to say don't challenge a prosecutor. And also, if you're a prosecutor, don't give a press conference before you've apprehended the parents you're looking for is another a whole story. So, okay, Mike Paul, the Baldwins said they gave up Twitter, which, you know, if you don't know the recent history, it's the third time they've given up Twitter this year. And also, they quit Twitter in 2011, in 2012, in 2013, in 2017. And then they told New York Magazine in 2014 they were quitting public life entirely. With all that, I get it. It's a bit of a tantrum. But there are all the headlines right there. So you can just see that I'm not just making it up. He is going to resume public life in, I think, a really good way with the Robert F. Kennedy Ripple Effects Awards. Do you think that's the right way to reenter public life? Or, I mean, it's all coming at the same as the Twitter nonsense.
Well, first of all, we know that when you delete a Twitter account, that doesn't mean that others have not already taken screen grabs of some of the worst things that have appeared in your Twitter feed. So that's one. And you just raise the price and the currency of those negative things that you had on Twitter before that somebody has saved against you. Regarding the RFK dinner, I'm a little close to this. Kerry Kennedy I've known for a long time. Other people who have worked for her over the years. Great award. The question is it best for Alec to be there? He's the MC. The Vice President of the United States is also invited. Other dignitaries that are associated with the award will also be there. Do you want to shake Alec Baldwin's hand at this event? Do you want to be associated with the negatives that he has? We've heard that he's going to be skipping the press gauntlet on the way in for the paparazzi as well as press questions. He's going to come in through the back door, supposedly, and just MC. I have worked events like this where there have been people in crisis where I've steered my client away from them and said, too many other people to take a picture with. It's not the time for somebody else to spin and turn a picture that could seem innocent into you agreeing with everything that Alex said in that interview or anything he might say in the future with this incident. Not worth it.
You know, you're so good at what you do. Mike Paul, I think it's University of Albany, right?
Please tell Chris I said
don't
hello.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you know this, but you went to school with my husband. He told me beforehand. And I said, how about that? Okay. So thank you, Mike Paul and Mark O'Mara, as always, you know, just mwah, brilliant. Thank you. Appreciate it, both of you.
Be well. Glad to be here.
Okay. See you soon, both of you. Okay. I'm going to switch gears, actually really in a major way. And I want you to grab a piece of cheesecake. I'm not kidding. Because close to 30 years after Golden Girls' last episode, that show is still igniting a spark in the way of a convention. You heard right. It's not in Miami Beach. And I'm guessing it's not in St. Olaf, but I'm going to tell you where it is, what's happening, and why it's happening next. The last episode of Golden Girls aired in 1992. And yet here we are, almost three decades later, and the show still strikes a chord sweeter than the theme song, to the point where Golden Con, thank you for being a fan, the convention is headed to Chicago in 2022. Joining us now is Jim Colucci, the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Golden Girls Forever. Jim, thank you for being here. Thank you for being a friend of the show. Thank you for writing that book. And is this even a thing? Maybe how is this even a thing?
It's incredible. The Golden Girls is a show. I say I Love Lucy and the Golden Girls are the two shows through history that have more fans after they went off the air, years after they went off the air, than they did when they were on the air. It just keeps growing. Golden Girls mania keeps growing. And it's because it's timeless humor. It's perfectly written and cast. The Golden Girls are having a moment, but that moment has been going on for 30-something years.
And aren't you leaving, like, in a month or so on a Golden Girls cruise called Golden Fans at Sea?
I am. It's actually the second time, the third time, if you count the fact that the first time it was announced, the cruise was so popular, they had to add a second one back to back. But, and COVID interrupted us a little bit, but this is going to be a reunion of so many people who went the first time and so many new fans in January cruising together. And it's a ship full of love. It's such an incredible fan experience to see the depth of people's ardor for this show and the way they dress as minor characters and they meet up to really just confer their love to each other about the show. It's such an amazing experience.
Well, even when we were planning this show today, two, count them on our show, two producers said, oh, yeah, we're big fans. So Gina Mackin, who's in my ear right now, who's going to kill me for doing this, her husband, Tim, is a diehard fan. And we got pictures of his wall at his house in his office filled with Golden Girls memorabilia. That's Gina's husband. So let's pop those pictures up if we can. And then also, Christopher Maloney has pictures of himself at Rue de la Rue Cafe, which used to be in New York City. There's Gina Mackin's husband's wall. Seriously, I'm not kidding. That's in his office. And then Christopher said, No, I have all these little people, Golden Girls figurines, because they're for my 4-year-old son. But I know it's not true, and I know that's he's not unusual. There they are, the little people. Why do people buy all this stuff?
Until recently, there hadn't been that much official Golden Girls merch. Disney is the studio that owns the show, and they've wisely decided to start creating stuff because we all buy it. We just want ways to appreciate this show. And when you love a show so much, and unfortunately only Betty White is still with us, you have to think of creative ways to just show that love. And what better way than to deck yourself out in Golden Girls gear and fill your shelves with Golden Girls dolls and fill your Christmas tree with ornaments. I have it all too. I can't point a finger.
Well, by the way, that Christopher Maloney producer said it was for his 4-year-old son, Rory, but we know it was for him. We know it. Okay, I only have 10 seconds left, but do you think that Betty White at turning 100 is going to be able to make it to the convention?
I think Betty would be mobbed by fans at the convention, so I think that she'd be wise to stay away because we'd tear her limb from limb. But I know that she will probably be so happy that we're meeting, and we maybe will get a message or a greeting recorded from her.
Well, that would be amazing. Hey, Jim Colucci, let's reconnect on this. I want to hear about that cruise when you get back. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Golden Girls forever. And he has got another one called All in the Family, the show that changed television. He co-wrote that with Norman Lear. They're available anywhere you buy books. And coming up, we asked via social media what TV show you would attend a convention for. We've got some really fun answers. Is your favorite show going to be on the list? Big reveal coming up next. Okay, Seinfeld is the big winner. We posted on social what TV shows you think deserve their own convention. And a couple of other good ones came in too, actually, like Quantum Leap. I don't know who thought that one. Murder, She Wrote is a good one. Rockford Files, I would go to that convention. Little House on the Prairie, and then Gilligan's Island. I could just see the costumes for Gilligan's Island and the props and all sorts of fun things. Thank you for playing along. It's been nice to have you with us for this hour. We'll see you right back here tomorrow, 10 p.m. Eastern on Banfield.